Bereishis chapter 37. So today in this chapter, we start an entirely new series in Sefer Bereishis. If we can divide the book into its main largest parts, then this has to be one of the biggest places where the parts divide. And we have a header also. And the header comes after one pasuk, interestingly. There's one pasuk of Vayeshev Yaakov Beretz Megurah Beretz Kanaan. This is definitely part of this new chapter, since the previous chapter was just the story of the descendant, the genealogy of Esav, so it can't be a continuation of that. It is in some sense a continuation of that, since that story had, in a very short way, how Esav lived in a new place, not in where his parents lived, because he moved away. And it also connects the more clear way with the previous story, which is how Yaakov or Yisrael traveled all the way back to Yitzchak. That's the end of the story. The last story before Tolles Esav was Yaakov returned to Yitzchak in Chevron, where he lived. And this is really should be really a continuation of that, but it was put all the way after the whole story of the children of Esav to connect it to the next story, which has its own header, which is Eda Tolles Yaakov. These are the descendants of Yaakov. Now, similarly to other headers, and this similarly to the kind of header, for example, of the previous chapter, which was told as Esav, and in some sense, these are like a pair, told as Esav, told as Yaakov. But in another sense, it's not, because really the list of children of Yaakov we had already once, right before that, right before Yaakov returned, which was the list of his 12 children. And then we have, in a certain sense, another longer version of this list later in the end of this story, when Yaakov goes down to Mitzrayim, and we have the list of him, Yaakov, and his all of his descendants, which is the most analogous to the one we have from Esav. The header here we have told us Yaakov isn't really for those, or maybe in some senses for those, but is really like other lists that start at the told us, like told us Hashmaim V'oretz, or like told us Terach, which did have a list, a little small list in the beginning, or told us Yitzchak, which also was similar to this, where you could always find some names, and just like we could find here. But there isn't really a header to a genealogical list. It's a header to a story. And the story is about the children, of course. Now, there's, again, since we mentioned all this, Yitzchak, which was the father of Yaakov, there is some analogy between that told us and the one here, which is that both start with the kind of fights or tensions between these children. Also a running theme in the whole Bereishis, where brothers don't seem to always get along. This seems to be a very hard thing. And of course, the important thing to make a note of here is that this beginning is a very strong new beginning. It's sort of, in some sense at least, the longest and most complicated one story in the whole Chumash. Of course, we can think about like the whole long story of Yetzias Mitzrayim from the beginning of Shemas to at least half of it, or in some sense the narrative all the way through Bamidbar, which is one long story, but it's not like about one character in the same sense as the story of Yosef, which sort of goes all the way to the end of Sefer Bereishis. We could make some splits in the middle, but it's sort of one very long and complicated story. And this first chapter, and there are also long chapters relatively, this first chapter that we're doing now is the chapter that starts the whole thing, and it's like, in some sense, the first scene or the first situation of this fight between Yosef and his brothers. It sets up the few things. Let's start like this. It sets up, at first, it sets up the kind of before, right? The situation before the whole tragedy, before the whole story of him being sold and everything started. So we get the setup. So let's give the setup. And there's so many ways. This is almost like a novel. There's so many ways of interpreting what was the cause. Is there something that's showing who is at fault here? What went wrong? But let's try to just give the setup of like what it says and then get to that. So what we have is that there's Yaakov. There's his children. Now, doesn't really. We already had a list of children, as we mentioned in previous stories. What we have here is that there's this child, Yosef. He's young, he's 17, and 17 is here considered young, Vinar. And He is a shepherd. He is shepherding his father's flocks along with his brothers. And there's two names or names of wives of his father mentioned here, children of Bilhah and children of Zilpah. He is with them. And apparently this just means they were the younger ones, so he was with them. Now, but Yosef is the youngest, or second youngest technically. But he is the young from the younger ones. And Yisrael, or who is Yaakov, and now named Yisrael, loved him more than all of his children because he was the youngest, or because what called here Ben Zikunim was born in his old age. And this seems to be like the reason. The Pesuk is giving us the reason. Why did he love him? It doesn't say because of something about Yosef. It says because of something about his father. His father loved him because he was born to him in his old age. And apparently, it's just like a given that old fathers have often a specific liking for children born in that times. And one more thing, one more fact about Yosef and this situation that I should have mentioned a second ago, is that Yosef was bringing some bad words, bad speech from his brothers to his father. And we can assume that this means also bad speech about his brothers to his father. And this seems to describe a picture of a child. So often when especially when there's older children, there's often some sense, or maybe not entirely, but some sense of like a conflict between the fathers and the children. And there's some children that are in some sense on the father's side, like we call them like the goody-goody kids, or the kid that's in like tattletaling on the other kids to the father. And that seems to be what is described here. And it says that because of that, his brothers hated him and cannot speak with him. So there's some emphasis on the speech. He speaks badly about them to his father, and therefore his brothers can't speak to him in peace. And peace meaning to say in love, in harmony. So, in other words, maybe they're afraid that he's going to tell whatever he tells them. He's going to tell to his father. So he's like breaching their secrets or their intimacy that they have between themselves. But it's not clear here, right? Just at this stage, and this is like the first little piece, the first setting of the stage, it doesn't say that they're hating him to the extent that they would kill him, or to that extent. It seems to be like a normal situation between siblings. But now, in the second important part of setting the stage, we have things getting even worse or more extreme. So we have this story, and this becomes also a motif in all of the stories of Yosef. So something very important, which is the Yosef has a dream. Now, dreams are an important thing in the whole book of Bereshis. We learned already about Avimelech's dream. We learned about maybe Avram's dream, although it doesn't not presented as a dream. But mostly from Yaakov and on, we have almost all revelations presented as a dream. Here we have something interesting, which is a dream, but not presented as a revelation. In other words, if I remember correctly, all or almost all the dreams that Yaakov had are presented as dreams, but are also presented as God speaking to him or revealing himself to him in a dream. Now we have Yosef who has dreams, but they're not said to be in the name of God. There seems to be some assumption that a dream is some kind of revelation. It has some predictive power saying the truth, but it's not saying he saw God in a dream. He just saw himself. He saw what is going to happen. Right, and as this set of two dreams, another thing that is going to repeat is like concept of a set of two dreams in the story. He has a set of two dreams. Interestingly, one something so to speak, one about the earth and another about the heavens. This first dream is a dream of them being in the field gathering wheat or gathering bundles of something. Didn't really say of what, and we imagine each of the brothers making his bundle or doing his part, and then their bundles surround his is standing in the middle, and they all bow down to him. Okay, then it's interesting because a second ago we had him being a shepherd with his brother, and suddenly he's doing more field work with his brother. So apparently they did both, but it's interesting to think about that. And his brothers have a response to this first dream, and they answer. It's interesting that in their response they also also interpret the dream, right? So maybe the interpretation is obvious, but they make it even more obvious. They make it explicit. They say, oh, so you're trying to be a king over us. And therefore they hate him even more. So we see the hate becoming more intensified. They hate him because of his dreams and because of his words. These words might mean the Dibur Samra that he brought. So before there was only, in other words, until now, there was only a hate about speech. So he spoke to his father about them. They didn't speak to him nicely. Now there's also the dreams. And this is becoming more intense. Now, his second dream was the dream of the heavenly bodies. He sees the sun and the moon and 11 stars bowing to him. And he tells his, another difference in this in the previous dream, he tells his brothers and his father. And apparently the reason is, as his father now. Now, instead of his brothers interpreting the dream, his father interprets the dream and says, do you think that me, your mother, and your brothers will bow down to you? And obviously this is interpreting the dream also saying that unlike the previous dream where only sort of the people on his level, the other bundles of wheat, were bowing down to him, now also the sun and the moon, who are sort of above the stars or however level it seems to be, like the hierarchy here goes that the sun and the moon are bigger than there's the stars, and the sun and the moon are representing his father and his mother, and the stars, the 11 stars, obviously the 11 brothers, and they're all bowing down to him. So his father says, will this happen? In the rhetorical question way, right? In the same way that his brother says, do you want to be a king over us? He says, what is this dream? Do you think we will bow down to you? And what this causes is, again, his brother is being jealous of him. Actually, I'm thinking now, we discussed sometimes that kinna in the Bible usually doesn't literally mean jealousy. It means something more like anger. It could be anger over a jealousy, but not literally mean jealousy. So maybe this is saying that it's not only they hated him, they were so angry. Kinna is more than hate. That's what I'm trying to get at. Sinna is just I hate you, but kinna is I'm mad at you. But v'ovev shomer asadov, his father has kept the thing. What does v'ovev shomer asadov mean? It means something. This has been a subject of interpretation. But it obviously means something like, and remember from the previous story, that his father is on his side. So it wouldn't make sense in the context of the story to say that his father is now mad at him against him. The whole point is that his father loves him. So whatever the exact translation of Shomer is, we should understand this probably to mean that his father really did some sense hope that this will happen. How he interprets the him himself bowing down to his son, maybe is a question, but it seems like he actually was pro. And then we get the question, why did he give him this response, right? Was he just trying to protect him from his brothers, or did he himself have like mixed feelings about this? Okay, so that's the beginning. That's the first story, we could call the setting of the stage, the introducing of the characters, telling us what was the situation of Yosef and his brothers, what was their age, where they lived, and what was the thing that caused the original hate, right? Something analogous, for example, when we talk about Yaakov and Esav, we had the setup of who they are and where they are, and then we had a story, much bigger story about the stealing the brachas, which is called caused Esav to hate Yaakov. Okay. Now, we have the next story, which is the story of his brothers. Now, as we discussed, his brothers are shepherding sheep. So that's where they went. They went. And now Yisrael tells Yosef, and this seems to be literally an instance of the previous thing. He tells him, let me send you to them. And he says, I'm there, I'm Hinani. He says, go check out the peace, which means the situation of your brothers and of the sheep, and answer me. And this literally seems to mean, tell me, give me the gossip, right? This is exactly what his brothers hated him for in the first step of the story, right? The first thing. And here we see an instance of this actually happening. His father saying, your brothers are there in Shechem. How about you go be sort of my spy, right? Of course, it can be said in a nicer way, but we already know that there's some bad blood in this. And he does that, right? He goes from Hebron, which is where they lived, as we understood from the beginning, and he comes to Shechem. Now, there's an interesting sort of series of stories where Yosef never gets to meet his brothers in Shechem. And this seems to be also an important symbol or important meaning in the story. He went out to get his brothers in Shechem, which can be interpreted as a nice thing. We have, by the way, an analogous thing is when David came to pick up his brothers, to check on his brothers in the war with Goliath. But here this was obviously not L'Sholem, right? That's the difference. It says, see their Sholem, see how they're doing, but really, Vashiveni Dovar. This is the Dvarov that they hate, right? The Diba Samura. And he walks in the direction of Shechem or somewhere, and he meets a man, an anonymous man, Ish. He is Toyev Asada. Now, Yosef is, and this is, whenever there's a pasuk like this, what it means is, they shoot it backwards, right? Yosef is lost in the field, and he meets a man. And just it's sort of presented from the perspective of the man. So the man is meeting him when he is already lost, is wandering. And the man asks him what he's looking for. There's like this little dialogue, very much in dialogue form. And he says, I'm looking for my brothers. And of course, there's something symbolic here also in this little dialogue, right? Because it's a very simple like conversation. It could have just said, Yosef was looking for them and found a man that told them that they went somewhere else. But it gives us this lengthy conversation for the symbol of like, I'm looking for my brothers, but they're not here. There's something that means. And that's the man told them, they're not here. I've heard them. Again, you see Yosef finding gossip, right? This man is not someone that's related to them, not someone that really knows. It's like, I've eavesdropped on them and I heard them saying, we're going to Daisan. And Yosef follows up on the gossip, right? He goes to Daisan. And now he's still there, he never gets to. And we sort of move to the perspective of the brothers. And we see them seeing him from afar. But before he can see them, sort of, or before he comes close, they start thinking of how could we kill him, right? Let's start planning on killing him. We have this little dialogue that expresses why exactly want to kill him. And as we saw before, the thing that caused them the most hate was his dreams. They say, oh, here's the dreamer. Let's kill him, throw him into one of the holes there, one of the boilers. And we'll say that he was killed by an animal, because obviously this is something that used to happen, right? Shepherds, one of their jobs is to protect the sheep from animals. Obviously, there's some wild bears, lions, and other wild large animals that would kill people too. And this is, in other words, they're saying, you know, this is this messenger from our father. He's coming to spy on us, but we're not in our father's possession now. We're in this sort of area where, you know, it's a dangerous area. It's the wilderness. We might as well use this to our advantage and say that he was killed by the wilderness, and it would be us, but, you know, he'll lose from this. And then we have the intervention of Reuven. Reuven comes and saves him, and there's a very nice pusik where it's like there's the perspective of Reuven, there's the perspective of his brothers, and there's the pusik, the narrator, who tells us what Reuven is really thinking, right? So Reuven doesn't say that he wants to save them. It says both in the beginning and the end of this pusik, or of this little story, that Reuven wants to save him. But Reuven just says, let's not kill him. And he tells his brothers, there's something improper about sending our hand, like lishlech yad, stretching our hand out against our brother. That's improper. That's not correct. Let's just throw him into one of these holes in the desert. And of course, they seem to mean, that means let's cause him to actually die in the wilderness. Let's cause him to be stuck in a ditch there or something. And then animal, whatever, nature will take care of the rest, right? But Yosef, Reuven is really thinking, I'll come back some later and save him. Or maybe he's just thinking to cool them down. They're being angry. But that's the presentation that he gives them. And they follow through on this. Yosef comes. No, they take off his... They strip him of his ksoinas. The ksoinas pass him. Of course, remember, this was the first thing that caused them to be jealous. The thing that he has, that they're like getting their revenge on that. They're taking it away. And they throw him all down into a bar. And this was an empty one, not with water. We would drown immediately. So very clearly, there's like somewhere we would be stuck, but not be killed. And that sort of has this dual meaning. But now, even this, just like Yosef was trying to get to Shechem and he never got there, tried to get to Dothan and never got there. Also, Reuven tried to get somewhere and never got there. He tried to leave Yosef at least stuck in this bar, and even that didn't happen. So there's like a whole series of Yosef's plans, so to speak, being thwarted and being like pushed off to something else. So the brothers sit to eat, as one does, and they see a caravan of Ishmaelim. It's interesting because Ishmaelim seems to be on the name of Ishmael ben Avram, or it was not so long ago, and there's like already groups of people, but also we know this just might just mean desert nomad. Maybe Ishmael himself sort of got together with those people. In any case, then these Ishmaelim have a travel itinerary. They're going from Gilead, from the north of Israel, right? The northeast of Israel, called Gilead, or they're at the other side of the Yad and Jordan, really. And they're traveling with their camels, carrying a bunch of different kinds of spices, besamim, to go down to Egypt. And this was obviously a known trade route that people, especially Ishmaelim, would travel. Maybe later it says, Anash Midyanim Soicharim, and this is famously maybe a contradiction. But the point is, this was a merchant route, and they were traveling there. And now Yehuda comes with a new idea. This is unlike Yosef's idea. And where was Yosef? Obviously, Yosef must have, Reuven must have not been there, or maybe just couldn't. Maybe Yehuda had some more power in this dynamic here. He couldn't contradict him. He couldn't go against him. And Yehuda has a similar language than Yosef. Reuven said, right? Reuven said, let's not kill him with our own hands. Let's let nature take its course. And Yehuda says something different or similar, but maybe he's trying to make it even better. He says, Ma betza. Ma betza literally means something like, what will we have from killing our brother and covering up his blood? Maybe he's saying, what you're doing now is this, is that. You're killing him and covering up his blood. Or like you're killing him through this wild animal that you're planning to have him die. How about we do something else? Let's sell him to the Ishmaelim. He's our brother. So Reuven, Yehuda seems to be even making the situation in some way worse and some way better, right? He wants to keep him alive, but sell him. And also, of course, they'll gain something out of it, right? They'll at least make money from selling him. And of course, this is also much another clear, even a clearer instance of getting their revenge on him in the sense of he wants to be the king and now he's going to be a slave, right? He's not even, they're going to sell him, that can be their slave, but he's going to sell him to as a slave. So this guy that wants to be king is going to be slave. Before it was just this guy that wants to walk around with his nice ksenas pasim is going to be stripped naked. And now it's, or naked of the ksenas pasim in any case. Now it's this guy that wants to be the king is not being the king, he's being a slave. And that's what they do. And they, Yosef is brought to Egypt with these merchants. And now we have the last scene in this part of the story before the story breaks off to talk about Yehuda himself. We have Reuven returning to the Boid and seeing Yosef is not there and going to his brothers and saying, where is he? This is, of course, kind of weird because they know where he is. But obviously what we understand here is that Reuven wasn't there while they sold him. And he's saying, what am I going to do? And this is weird because if they understood that Reuven's plan is that we're going to leave him there, then what is he saying? But what they do is they actually follow through on their plan. Maybe this is really should be understood as like a separate thing. I'm not sure now how to think of this little piece about Reuven coming back. But they come back. Then what they do is they take Yosef's shirt, Yosef's ksoines. I don't know if ksoines is literally a shirt. And they kill a young goat. And they dip the ksoines into its blood and send that to his father. So this is again them sort of playing on Yosef's role, which was sending information from them, like, you're going to get some news from Yosef, but it's not going to be the news that you were asking for. And they say, look, we found this. Tell us if this is your child's ksoines. And yes, and Yaakov says, yes, this is his. He must have been killed by a wild animal. Like, we can see his blood on his shirt still. And what we have is the report of Yaakov's great avelus, Yaakov's great mourning. Many days he mourns his son, all his children and daughters. His sons and daughters try to console him, he's unconsolable. He says, this is the language that we find also by David. When someone is saying, he's saying something like, my life is not worth anything. I will be going down to Sheol, which is where people go when they die, in the Tanakh, and I will be sad until then. In other words, I'm going to now die in my mourning. And the last pusuk in this chapter is that the Medonim sold him. Now we heard that he's going to Mitzrayim. Now we hear who he's getting sold to a man named Potiphar, who is the Sris Parai Sarat Abachim. We will find out the continuation of that in two chapters.